Charlie and a few of their friends. Chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better when you do beer.
Right. How's everybody doing tonight?
Wow, guys, happy Memorial Day. Well,
Memorial Day
after
Tuesday.
Memorial Day. Yeah,
big day for sales.
Yeah, big day for sales.
Black Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah, very, very popular.
I'm Charlie Todd.
I'm Cody Lindquist. We are a married couple who love two things, beer and politics.
So we were typically just getting drunk at home and talking about politics with friends. We decided to do it on stage instead.
Yes, we're going to chug some beers up here with our panel. We're going to chug beers in front of you because if we told you we were drunk already, would you believe us? I don't know.
No, you wouldn't.
Probably
it's like,
not.
It's like magic. You can't do it off stage.
Exactly.
You have to
we're
get
the
drunk.
David Copperfield of politics and beer.
That's right. Who is here for the first time has never seen our show before? A lot of people.
Woo!
Okay.
That's
welcome.
Awesome. Who? Let's just do a rough survey.
Let's
who,
get a temperature
who's a
of the
registered
room.
Democrat?
Registered Democrat, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, how
cool.
About...
Yeah, let's do applause. Let's
yeah,
do applause.
Let's do applause, because we can't see anything. Who's a registered Republican?
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Who's, like, probably a Republican, but doesn't want to say it in this liberal crowd? Woo!
Libertarian,
okay. Yeah. Cool. Gary Johnson's in the audience.
Who is hashtag I'm with her?
Oh, wow.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Oh, I love the pause.
Oh, is anybody else
it's
for Hillary like
God,
me?
I don't know if I could tell anyone that.
Who's feeling the burn? Okay, all right.
Who is just really sick of politics? If so, oh, I'm so sorry. This is going to be the worst hour of your life.
<We're>
Come back
gonna...
next Tuesday, too.
yeah, well, we should say we have a show a week from tonight,
yes.
And we have a very big guest next week. Alex Wagner is here.
Guys, if you're a huge journalist nerd like we are, mm-hmm. This is like the guest.
Yeah.
We are so excited.
Used to be MSNBC. Now she's with The Atlantic. She is awesome, and yeah, we're really excited that she said yes. She's going to be here next week.
Yeah.
We have a show 1 week from tonight. That
yeah.
Doesn't really happen, but
yeah,
come back.
Because I mean, there's nothing going on in politics. Like, why? What are we going to talk about?
Trump will say 80 interesting things between now and Tuesday, so the show will be fresh.
So I think why don't we just go ahead and start? We'll bring our panel out and get to drinking some beer.
Okay, let's start the show and bring out our first panelist. He is a writer for the amazing Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Please welcome to the stage, Dan Gerwich.
Yes. And she is a writer for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, Melinda Taub.
And finally, our last guest is a member of the editorial board for the New York Daily News. Please welcome Robert George. All right, and we're very excited about our guest bartender. This is our first repeat guest bartender.
Yes.
He was at our very first show in December.
And, I mean, it's just amazing that he has the time to come here because, guys, Donald Trump is everywhere right now, but
yep.
He took the time to come here to speak to you guys tonight. We're so excited.
Please give it up for guest bartender Donald J. Trump!
Woo! The first time
so
Donald
much,
Trump's
Trump.
Ever actually served other people.
Oh. Thank you so much.
All right, the woman can shut her mouth.
Food.
Wow, incredible. What an incredible group of people. What a beautiful group of people. You're so amazing. I'm so happy to be here in New York. Very happy to be back in New York. You might have seen me this morning. I did an incredible press conference, and we're doing so well. We're winning everywhere, and I'm presumptive. I'm presumptive. I'm more presumptive than I've ever been. I'm more presumptive than I've ever been. And when Dobie Gillis over here wanted me to come on the show, you guys remember Dobie Gillis, right?
Yeah.
Very fun show, you young millennials. There we go. The one old guy remembers it. And Dobie Gillis starred the guy named Gilligan. Remember Gilligan's Island? Remember Gilligan? No? Okay, let's move it further up. Remember an old guy got busted for smoking dope who wore a sailor's hat? That's the guy I'm talking about. Wow. And Bernie's going down, isn't he? Bernie's going very sad. I tell him to run for third party. I tell him to run for third party because, you know, Bernie is, he's a leftist fascist. I'm a right-wing fascist. He's a left-wing fascist. We could meet, we could make a bird. We could make a bird. And we landed at LaGuardia. Disgusting. LaGuardia is disgusting. What a terrible place. But I was around the city today. I have to say at my press conference, the press was pretty tough on me, huh? Who thinks of, I mean, the press is very tough. They're very terrible people. The political press, terrible, awful people. Normally I have that fat pig Chris Christie with me to protect me. Big, disgusting fat guy. I mean, I love him. He's a great guy. His nipples look like two Butterfingers were stapled to his tits. And I'll say, you want to know, he told me in private that Sandy, the reason Sandy was so terrible is because he was in the state and he sinks the sea level of New Jersey by 3 inches when he's there. He should have gotten out of the state. He was trying to get out of the state. He wanted to get out of the state. No one would let him. And it was terrible. I mean, this guy is so disgusting. He has so much mass. I stood near him, and I lost 3 months of my life because he has an event horizon. He has an event horizon, and no light can escape, and time slows down. I saw Matthew McConaughey in there in a giant infinite series of bookcases looking for his daughter. And it was unbelievable. But I had to say, really, very important here. I don't know what's going. I think my followers are here, okay? Because it's very violent behind me. Very violent behind me. And I want to say something very, very important. Very important, okay? I gave the money to the vets. I did a press conference about the vets today. And I gave I raised $6 million. Did I give all the $6 million away right away? No, I didn't give it all away right away. I took my time with it, but you have to take your time with money. I didn't know. I thought I was raising $6 million for veterinarians. I didn't know that it was vets, because I love veterinarians because they euthanize children's pets. And I love seeing the light leave the eyes of a child as they watch the pet die. It's one of my favorite things. I love it. I used to kill Ivanka's pets and leave them for her as a prize. And I would arrange the bones. And then, of course, we would have sacred, magical Aleister Crowley sex with each other. And it was incredible. She's the most incredible lover you've ever had. And you know what? You don't know love until you touch your own flesh. And what I want to say, you don't know it. You don't know it. You don't know it. You don't know it. And so I took the reporters, I talked to the reporters, and we're doing so incredible. I mean, there's crowds of people everywhere. You know, I go to the Washington Mall the other day. I go to the Washington Mall. There's not one shop, not one shop. Terrible. That's a crisis this country is in. There is not one shop in the open mall. It's unbelievable. It's just a giant park. And there's this giant tall building, this monument, this Washington Monument. We got to get rid of it. We're going to put a food court there. We're going to put, we're going to put a Zabarro's there because we want to lure Rosie O'Donnell out of hiding. And then we'll kill her. And then we'll kill her. Well, I have the light. I think you're all idiots. And I can't wait to murder all of you. There we go. Right? Is that it? That's all you want from me,
thank
right?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Give it up for Donald Trump.
The real Donald J. Trump, everyone.
Richie Cunningham, everybody. Richie Cunningham.
All right. Chug the rest of those beers. How is everybody feeling?
I ate two slices of pizza. I chugged two slices of pizza before this. I'm not in a good spot right now.
This is the part of the show where people typically burp, so it's okay.
I've burped like 30 times. I'm doing all right, though.
When was the last time everybody chugged a beer?
I attempted to beer bong, do a beer bong at a bachelor party, and it went very terribly about 5 or 6 days ago.
Sounds like there's a story behind that.
Oh, no, just that I'm like not a bro, and I can't do bro things.
Yep.
Yeah, we bring a lot of non-bros on stage.
Yeah,
not a lot of bros. Of beers.
I'm glad you made the space for the brother, not just the bros.
That's right.
That's a good thing. We
that's
appreciate
right.
It.
We have non-bros and we have a brother on stage. That's right, Robert.
Yeah.
So we're drinking a Bronx Session IPA. It's 5% alcohol, a little more than we had last couple shows.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it.
I'm feeling the burn in my throat.
But that's the premise of the show, so that's good. Dan, we're going to start with you.
Sure.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about just how comedians can cover Trump. We have both Dan and Melinda here from John Oliver's show and Sam B's show. So I'm just curious, John Oliver purposefully did not cover Trump for a really long time, right?
Yeah.
And then in February did a big piece where all of the blogs said that he eviscerated him. And
I mean, it worked, right? well, I think we can all agree he's so done. It worked.
So that piece was
you great. Killed the campaign right there.
yeah. Yeah, everyone remembers his big concession speech. He got up. he was like, "I saw the piece. I'm done. Goodbye."
So I mean, I totally agree. Like, we can't ignore him, right? I think your show tried to ignore him, and then like, well, this is we have to do something.
Yeah, sure.
And then you eviscerated him, but he didn't. but he, you know, is he bulletproof?
I mean, well, a big thing we talked about while working on that piece was that like it was really important to the other writer that worked on it. I mean, everyone works on everything, but Julie Wiener, another writer, and I were the main writers on it.
Right.
And something that we kept on talking about in meetings was like to try to not do the sort of Daily Show gotcha, like he said one thing, then he said another thing, because he, even by that point, it was clear that that was not a thing that mattered. And and so we tried to just at least like refute the points, not that he himself was making, but that like other people seemed to think are true about him. And clearly that didn't work either. I don't know. I mean, bulletproof? I mean,
how do you make fun of someone? I mean, not that it's the job of the political comedy, the Daily Show,
right.
and its progeny to take down a candidate.
Sure.
But how, you know, could the Democratic Party, could Hillary use humor to defeat Trump? I know Hillary's
Oh, there's the funniest thing we've heard all night.
Also, Marco Rubio tried, and he had to apologize for saying he had a small penis this weekend. He's like, "Oh, I tried to be funny, but it's dick size. Sorry."
That's not who I am as a person, is
nope.
what he said.
I'm not a funny person, what I'm saying.
I don't know. I think it's interesting because I think that he's proved that if you're basically like, if you are a force of complete chaos that doesn't believe anything that you say and doesn't expect anyone else to believe anything that you say and doesn't care what anyone thinks about what you say and doesn't even know what he's going to say next, then you kind of defeat any attempts to point out why you're wrong. It's really just up to like people to decide whether they want that or not. Like I firmly believe that like there's a very strong core of people that want him to be president, and that then we've reached that like maximum number of
his ceiling.
I think that we've reached that maximum number of people. I don't think he's winning over more people. Right. However, I've been wrong about literally everything.
We all have.
So I don't know.
So basically, yeah. You're saying we're all doomed. Great, Melinda. What do you think?
I like on an intellectual level, I agree. I feel like all the conventional wisdom is that like he has hit that ceiling, and that like there are a lot of people in America who think Donald Trump is terrible. And sometimes if you watch the news, you forget that because they cover him so relentlessly. But like in the general election, hopefully all the things that don't seem to matter right now will actually matter.
Right. And we're almost to the general election. Well, one thing we love about almost, boy,
I know 6 months.
I know if we were in England, we wouldn't even be starting this process until like 3 months from now.
What's that song on Rent?
yeah. I don't know Rent that well, I'll be honest. A bad theater major, I don't know Rent that well. but Melinda, one thing we love about Full Frontal is that Samantha Bee is really, really blunt and direct with her language when she's covering specific congressmen and politicians.
Yes, she is.
Yes, very, which I think is very different in the political comedy landscape.
This is the first job where I was like encouraged to call people cunts.
Yeah, it was like, "You're a fucking dick, and I'm pointing to you."
Yes.
You say it much more eloquently than I just did, but it is basically that. But do you hear feedback from any of the politicians? Has anybody come to you and said, "Hey, I'm just wondering," because she literally just calls people out. So I'm wondering what the reaction is from any of the politicians you've covered.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we've really had, not that I can remember. I think I pay less attention to that stuff because it stresses me out. I don't want to like look at the tweets of people hating us and stuff. But like we've mostly heard positive stuff from people.
From other people that hate the person you're attacking.
Yeah. People who are like, "Yes, she is a cunt."
Yeah, it's just interesting because you guys get so specific, I think, on people who are like even local politicians. Like this community board member, Tam Hancock, is ruining
Hancock.
This town or whatever. And like, it's like, I don't know. Like, I feel like you guys are elevating assholes, are putting the spotlight on assholes who deserve the spotlight to be put on them, who probably never anticipated that they would be the light would be shined upon them.
Yeah, I think it is a fun thing about the internet era is that those people, you know, in decades previously probably just got away with it because they were, you know, just working on a local level. But now, even if you're just a like Georgia state senator who blocks a bill to help rape victims for no reason, that can blow up on the internet and we can find out about it and we can do a national television show about how you suck.
How you personally suck.
Well, yeah. That's what's great. Interesting. I think that the Daily Show paved the way, right, you know, for political comedy, I think, in a lot of ways. And then, I mean, Saturday Night Live, of course, did as well. But Daily Show kind of took it to the next level. And I think people were worried that there wouldn't be enough room for different types of comedy, political comedy. But, boy, things are really blown up right now, and it seems like there's just a plethora of shit to talk about. Mm-hmm.
Guys, I want to apologize for using the C word a bunch. I'm sorry about that. I just came from work, and use it all the time.
And I'm drunk.
However, Cody did use an SAT word, plethora, so that's really nice.
Yes, yes. Plethora. So, I think it's plethora.
So, Robert, obviously, we want to talk to you about where you stand right now. So you are an editorial board member of the New York Daily News. For those that don't know Robert, he also used to work at the RNC. Used to work for Gingrich, you told me.
Most recently, I've only been at the Daily News for about 2.5 months. Before that, I was at the New York Post.
The New York Post is supporting Trump. Is that true?
The New York Post is supporting Trump.
Okay,
yes.
And the Daily News is #NeverTrump.
Definitely not supporting Trump. Yes, yeah. That is correct.
So that's the big divide in our.
Did you leave papers? Because they were supporting Trump?
Whoa, breaking. That was the thing you were not supposed to ask me about. No, no.
Oh, no, no.
It was kind of a happy coincidence. This is quite true. The Post was drifting. I noticed it was drifting in the direction of Trump, but the Daily News people kind of called me up very randomly, like end of February or so, and asked to talk, and we started talking. I think. Oh,
you've only been there 2.5 months.
That's what I said. Oh, wow. 2.5 months. You said, the beer is already hitting you. Yeah,
hey,
I said 2.5 months.
Also, let's open up another beer.
Yeah,
Let's dive in. I'll open it up. I'll get everyone a beer. So I'm a
Robert,
hostess with the most. Yeah.
So my question to you, I think it's been so you're a Republican. Sometimes you vote Libertarian. You told me, but you often vote Republican. And I think it's been staggering to watch Republicans flock towards Trump in the last few weeks.
Staggering is a nice word. Pathetic and lame is another word. Are other words, too.
This is what happens after that, 2 beers in.
So did that, has that shocked you? I mean, did you see that coming?
I've been involved in politics for years, and I've been covering politics for, 15 plus years. How can you be surprised that politicians would act craven? Because I mean it's like the scorpion and the frog. I mean it's in their nature. I mean that's what they do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but is it craven? I mean, I guess if he wins, it is. But.
Well, it's craven in the sense that any politician, well, most of the politicians who think they still have a future and want to run and be viable for higher office. He's the nominee now, and if he wins, which I hope he isn't, but last fall I was predicting that his campaign was over when he slammed John McCain, and look where he is now. If he wins, he will be the head of the Republican Party. Not only will he be president and head of the Republican Party, and so if you want to operate in that sphere, you're going to have to do what you're going to have to do.
Well, that's what we've had this discussion. I think of myself as a party gal, political party.
That was really lame.
You want more of them, right?
That was really lame.
No, but
just an immediate mass exodus from the theater.
I know. I love a pun. I'm sorry. It's the highest form of humor.
I love this woman right
thank
here.
You, thank
no
you.
Thank
you. But I think that if the Democrats rallied behind, like a Kanye West, and we were like, yeah, he's the nominee, I feel like I'd be like, great, Democrats, go fuck yourself. I'm moving on.
Yeah, it just seems
I really
like,
just don't think I'd be like, well,
really?
That's
wait a second,
great.
You're saying if the Democrats nominated Kanye West, you would leave the party?
Yes. I would.
I don't think that would not be the common response.
I think
Kanye,
really?
Yes.
I think it would be.
He's
He's crazy. He's a crazy, self-involved narcissist.
He says some smart things that I guess maybe I'd agree with, but he also just tweets about himself all the time. Yeah, like
he calls himself Jesus.
I don't know.
And he's so.
I kind of think I might be if Donald Trump was our nominee.
But if it was Mitt Romney versus Kanye West, I'd probably vote for Mitt Romney or just write in Mickey Mouse. I don't know. Mitt Romney is right now the
most stand up guy in the Republican Party, because he was the one who was calling out Trump a couple months ago, and he was until like practically yesterday he was actively looking for a third party option to challenge Donald Trump, because he thinks that Donald Trump is a complete and total joke and will take the Republican Party down into infamy. So, kudos to Mitt Romney.
I think it's stupid, but I think for the Republicans who are backing him right now, if he loses, I think they'll be defeated in their next election. Just with, my opponent voted for an insane person who killed the entire party and I didn't.
As much as I hate Donald Trump, I will have to say this: there is a segment of Trump supporters, not the crazies, not the white supremacists.
Not those guys.
There is a segment out there who feels that the Republican Party of the last few years has not represented their economic interest. Many working class folks, primarily white, but not completely. I'm actually surprised how many taxi drivers of various backgrounds, other working class folks, Latinos, even Latinos and black, who say, Trump is actually saying something. We have been screwed over by this policy or that policy. So that element is there, and he has, for better or worse, kind of brought that to the fore, which is something that other Republicans will have to deal with, whether he wins or loses.
You're saying people are tapping into that and just ignoring the Nazi parallels. They're like, well, he's sort of a Nazi, but I really like what he says. He speaks true on the economics.
Some people come for the free trade, stay for the racism, but
everyone has their problems.
It's true. Others try and ignore it.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, I think the Hitler analogy is an interesting You can actually look at the success of Trump a little bit in the same terms that you think about that Hitler analogy. So, the thing about Hitler analogies is that everyone makes them all the time way too much, right? And then when you make them about...
I'm sorry, I was part of that problem.
No, but, what I'm saying is that, you're actually right when you make them about Trump and some of the, fascist ways that he is behaving.
And nobody listens to you now.
Right, because everyone is always comparing everyone to Hitler.
The boy who cried Hitler for
problems. Yes, exactly. And so I think that, and that's actually, somewhat similar to the way that, The Boy Who Cried Hitler, by the way, is a great idea for a book. But it created
a furor on the bestseller list.
But it's similar to the way that it's similar to the reason that Trump is as successful as he is, because he says so many crazy things all the time that none of them matter anymore. Right. So if you are a normal person and you say all normal things and then also Mexicans are rapists, you're out. But if Mexicans are rapists is the norm for you, then that becomes not offensive anymore. And
in
who
fact,
cares,
it was the first thing you said.
It was the first thing you said. Literally one of the first things you said.
I'm not going to lie to you people. Mexicans are racists. And I'm also going to say a bunch of other shit. But that's me. I speak truth to power.
Yeah.
And
then
he's Mexicans just are rapists.
That was me
not
making
racist.
Fun
rapists,
of him. Yes. Or that was me making fun of Trump. I don't personally, Cody Lindquist, think those things.
But it's fascinating that there's that much power in nonsense. If you just spew complete chaotic nonsense, you win, I guess. No one can point out anything wrong about you because everything is wrong. And if people the fact that everything is wrong, then what do you do? It comes back to your first question. I don't think that anyone, there's nothing that you can say, I firmly believe this, there's nothing that you can say to anyone that is a Trump supporter that will have them not be a Trump supporter. There's nothing. If they have decided at this point that they like this, then they like that. That's not going to stop ever.
Yeah, Trump could never have a gaffe. Because almost everything he says is already not true, so he can't have a stumble that is big news, because he says he lies every single day.
The one notable exception of that, actually he's done a couple where he realized that he'd gone a little and he had to actually dial it back.
when he made the line that women who have an abortion should be prosecuted. Then they realized, okay, that one was just that's even too far for us on the right. You know,
we don't think they should go to jail.
That
for
was
it.
A dog whistle that he didn't even like. He
that
didn't
dog
speak
didn't
the
hunt though.
But then like,
well, no, that was the problem. And suddenly you had this moment where the left and the right were all coming together and saying, no, this will not stand. And he said, well, I didn't quite mean it that way.
I know. I love it that he's like, wait. What am I supposed to say to you people? What do you want me to say?
But then it's like he changed it so many times so quickly afterwards that even that was meaningless. Like it's like...
Because he's ultimately pro-choice.
Well, I guess...
And I do want to hold some of this Trump talk, move the subject away a little bit, because we are going to have Anthony come out in a little bit. And I want to hear his opinion as someone who's been playing Donald Trump on the road for months. So I want to quickly just sort of swing over to Hillary. Because, guys... Trump isn't the only one running for president.
And I have to suddenly remember that I am a Republican. Please, go ahead.
Yes. So actually, this is a good question for you. So Hillary's emails are back in the news. Can Hillary learn from Trump and sort of figure out how to brush off a scandal? And is this a scandal?
It is a scandal. And the answer is no.
She can't
learn from Trump because you know he's like Teflon, she's like crazy glue. I mean,
sort of true. Everything
sticks to her. And part of the problem, one of the reasons why Trump is doing so well is that people's faith in the broad political system, the generic politicians, is just completely collapsed. They think that they all, Republican or Democrat. People think that they all lie, they all switch positions, all this other. So when you have somebody like Trump who takes this like to like an insane level, people say, whatever. But he at least like on a very primal level like entertains them. Hillary is somebody who has kind of a history of half truths and misrepresentations and lies and things like that. And the email,
I'm with her hashtag. So
great rebuttal, Cody. That was a great rebuttal.
Thanks,
you won the argument with a hashtag.
That's even the state hashtag.
And it's not just me. I mean, even the State Department Inspector General says that she didn't follow procedures on the emails. She didn't follow the procedures when she was leaving the State Department or while she was there. And it kind of like it undercut the storyline.
Could you imagine if we were to rate the like 100 terrible things Trump has done since he announced
or said.
Canada, the top 100, if one of those were like he kind of followed bad protocol with his email within his corporation and maybe did something like a little shifty with where his server was, like that'd be like number 300.
We're like, we don't know what we don't know anything about this guy.
But you're feeling the burn, right?
No.
Hashtag no, so I'm with
you're
her.
With her. You're
come on, everyone. Feel free to applaud. I know you want to.
anybody here feeling the burn?
Yeah, we have Sanders.
Who's feeling the burn here?
We definitely have Sanders.
You know, even even though Bernie Sanders said, well, you know, I don't want to hear about the emails and so forth, the Bernie folks would like to hear about like you know the Goldman Sachs transcripts. And she's been mealy mouthed about them. If it was just the email, you'd be right if it was just like the emails. But there's just been like a history of this.
Why haven't you guys been covering this scandal? I haven't heard anything from Samantha Bee or John Oliver.
The email
you know?
Scandal?
Yeah.
I think we don't fucking care about
exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I couldn't care less. I don't think John could care less. I don't think anyone, yeah.
Right? It seems like of all the things,
it's just such a hard thing to like get worked up about. It's just like
she's one of the most she's known she was going to run for president since she was probably like 10, right?
Yeah.
So everything she's done since she was 10 was like, wait a minute. Like
So why would she set up the personal
because
server?
She did not want people to find any emails she said in private because everyone misconstrues everything she says. Yeah. People are saying
because she like knew a guy in the 90s that committed suicide and we're still talking about how she killed her.
Yeah,
right?
I feel like she's like she is definitely like objectively psychotically paranoid. And she's also kind of justifiably psychotically paranoid.
Because there has been a conspiracy against her.
Yeah, and so it's like, I'm not saying that makes it okay. Like, she behaves in a kind of a crazy paranoid way. but she's also kind of right. You know, it's like it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, to me, like I have trouble getting worked up about the emails because I can very much understand how you would get to the point of thinking that that was a good idea. I think it was like, it worries me in terms of her like administrative skills because that and giving the speeches at Goldman Sachs, she didn't need to do either of those things. And
especially give speeches at Goldman Sachs.
But in both cases, she knew she was running for president. So A, why would you set up the private server? Two,
she set up the private server because she was running for president. I also want to point out that I just tried to talk into my beer. I thought it was my microphone. And I know some of you saw that, so I thought I would just point out the fact that you knew that I just went like this and talked into my beer. Anyway, don't forget what the point of this show is. I'm drunk.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only had a granola bar for dinner so far, so this is like, I'm trying hard to like form coherent thoughts, and it's not going great.
I think we're a little drunker than normal tonight, maybe. One thing I wanted to talk about is Bernie last night was at the Game 7 of the NBA playoffs. Bernie also had Hamilton tickets recently. Robert, I know you were tweeting about this. is it bad optics for Bernie to maybe going to these events where tickets are very expensive and can only be afforded by the 1%?
If I could rephrase that slightly, what would be the reaction if Hillary Clinton is at the NBA game, aside from people laughing at the fact that she's there, the fact that she's sitting in $1,600 VIP tickets. What's the reaction going to be if Hillary's there versus Bernie?
I agree.
I think it's totally like successful like branding on like Trump's part and even Sanders' part. Like it's like they're just viewed through such completely different lenses that you can't even, it's hard to compare them. Because like if Trump, you know, had an email scandal like you were saying, he'd be like, I don't like following those, all these red tape rules. I do my own thing. And everybody's like, whoa, you're fucking awesome!
By the way.
You know, and like, so it's like, I don't know.
And
like,
then
we found out today, by the way, Donald Trump actually doesn't know, this is not a joke, Donald Trump actually doesn't know, does not use email at all, so there would be no Donald Trump email. No, he just, it's the short fingers. It's the short fingers, he can't type. No.
You know what they say about someone with short fingers? No, I don't. I'm not Marco Rubio. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. We had Evan McMorris Santoro, who's BuzzFeed's White House reporter, who followed Bernie around on the show a few months ago, and he talked about how when Bernie flew Southwest Airlines, he wouldn't sit in the front seat, even though it's not first class. Like, he demanded to be in the back of the plane because of the optics, and he wanted to seem like a working man. But I think now he knows he's going to lose, and he knows he's just like,
he's the anti-Rosa Parks.
He's just like, fuck it, I'm going to take Hamilton tickets.
Does anybody think that Bernie, the Jewish guy from Vermont, likes basketball? Is he a basketball
player?
He was a basketball player when he was a teenager.
No, actually.
There's
a clip online.
Oh, well then good. Never mind.
There's a clip online where he's playing with, playing with his grandkids and he's actually got a pretty good shot. You know,
that was racist and sexist of me that I assumed Bernie. I was like, come on, guys. Likes basketball? I don't know.
It's time to bring our friend Anthony Tamanic back on stage. Let's bring Anthony back on stage. Grab that microphone right there, Anthony. His now world famous Donald Trump impression.
Oh, yeah.
We were blessed with that. Thank you for coming back and doing that.
Yeah, we actually.
Yeah, they were fucking complete ingrates. So
the audience.
Poor Anthony is like on his week long break, and we're like, come in and do this thing you were doing.
I just want to prepare
the audience, and Anthony is really good at attacking the audience.
Absolutely,
get ready.
And you deserve it. I want to say first off, it was actually Orthodox Jews in the turn of the century who started playing basketball.
They invented the game in New York, no joke.
Yeah,
this is true.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not a huge surprise, actually, that Bernie plays ball because it's in our Semitic blood.
Well, you know what?
And it's appropriate. I think the last five commissioners of the NBA have all been Jewish.
Well, I'm really excited
surprise.
When Bernie...
And by the way, of course, Bernie was around when they invented the game in Europe.
This is true. Anthony's been touring the country.
I'm an ignorant person.
But Anthony's been touring the country with Trump versus Bernie, the debate.
That's right.
And we had
the two Fusion specials. Fusion is a ham radio station that became a cable channel. And if you really want to know that media can be irrelevant, go to the Fusion Network.
So I want to ask you.
So season two isn't going to happen.
So you've been doing these mock Bernie versus Trump debates, and now and this week in the news there was almost maybe kind of a real one.
It was like seeing half of a tit in junior high. It was like you thought you were going to see the nipple, and then you didn't.
But Trump sort of chickened out. He was like, "Oh yeah, I debate Bernie, but only if we got
$10 million.
You
didn't get to see the nipple.
Everybody was like, "Yeah, we'll give you $10 million," and he didn't.
And he wanted to. He's scared.
But would that have been good for Trump? Would have been good for Bernie? Would it have been bad for Hillary? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it would have been good for Trump, and I think it would have been the final nail in the stake for Bernie's both semi-authentic and also inauthentic working man identity, because he would have shown his face like all human beings. You run for president, you want to be president. You run for president, you've got a big ego. There's no such thing as an egoless person who runs for president. So I know, I'm sure there's a bunch of Bernie heads in here, and let me just shatter the reality for you. He is a fucking politician like anybody else. His wife nosedived a university in Vermont.
She destroyed a university by herself.
Yeah, she destroyed single-handedly a university. And
Burlington College is no more because of Mrs. Sanders.
Because of Mrs. Sanders. And I want to say this was local.
They felt the burn. This was burned to the ground.
Burned it to the ground. There are local Burlington residents who talk about this. This isn't like some secret right-wing conspiracy, and I am a lefty from fucking Boston. I voted for Dukakis, okay?
Are we talking about...
Beware of Greeks wearing lifts.
Are you talking about fire?
Whoa, that's
like
good.
She burned with fire?
No, she financially crashed. Okay,
yeah, we're all like, wait a second, did she literally burn down?
I love her. The most conservative person on stage and the most liberal person on stage are
agreeing, because it's a farce. Because this is a farce. And I want to put one more point out to this audience. Audience, okay? Because I want to just add a snap poll of the Bernie bros.
New York wants snap poll.
Snap poll.
Get your Time Warner cable remotes out.
Hillary gets the nomination. How many people are going to be like, fuck it. I'm writing somebody in, or I'm not voting because I'm not voting for that witch. And if Trump, if Trump wins, fuck it. We deserved it. Who agrees with that? Fantastic. Fantastic.
You've all been spared a lecture.
I think you're scared. I personally think
you have nowhere
scared.
To put your anger. There's so much pent-up anger that cannot be released.
That's such bullshit. You wouldn't
Anthony's,
give it
you didn't actually, Anthony's bathroom you didn't mirror give, is going to be the victim of a long speech later
that's
tonight.
Right.
Because
you didn't
of what
give
was,
him the other choice, though. You didn't ask them how many Bernie bros would think about voting for Donald Trump.
How many Bernie bros would think about voting for Donald
Over
Trump?
Over Hillary Clinton.
Or Hillary.
There's Bernie bros.
You're lying.
I'm messing with you.
We're in New York City, so I don't think that there's a
oh,
Bernie,
I guess there isn't a huge
Trump
thing.
Crossover,
I want to say
think.
That this movement, in the Bernie movement, where they're like, no, Bernie, you're bust, is the exact example of upper middle class privilege in this country. Because your idea is burn it to the ground, because I'm not black, I'm not Mexican, I'm not a Muslim. Who gives a shit? I already live off my parents' fucking money. So what the fuck do I care about who's president? So that is your fucking strategy, you shitheads.
But you know what?
By the way, Ralph Nader been there, done that.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what, Anthony? I will say, we had you on our very first show, which is, we were not podcasting yet, so no one heard it. But that was a few months. No, the
right.
Oh, you mean it was like an MSNBC show?
Basically, yeah. It was 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. I think that the mood seems to have shifted a little bit. Like when we were asking, it wasn't clear whether or not Hillary or Bernie were going to get the nomination. And now I do sort of feel like there is this
people are capitulating
shift from some Bernie supporters, and we know plenty of hardcore Bernie supporters that are like, all right, like tell me what you like about Hillary. There has been a little bit of a shift
now
that it's
clear. I've met Bernie twice. He's a nice guy. He's a super... I have a problem with that guy. I have a problem with people's followers. And the same vibe I get at Bernie events, I get at Trump events. Same vibe.
Right, exactly.
Same menacing, weird vibe.
So are
there's
you
like
worried?
A Simon and Garfunkel song playing at the Bernie events, and everybody's like holding hands.
But the only difference is, do I want some redneck guy in his mid-40s hustling around me with like big meat chop arms? Or a swarm of like six or seven white-capped bro dudes wearing shorts like mine, all swarming around the Bernie. It's just tactically which type of transformer you want. It's not like they're any fucking different.
Yeah, because they're both fascists.
Oh, wow. They are. They're liberal fascists.
You don't really think that Bernie's a fascist.
I absolutely believe that there are a lot of Bernie supporters who are just liberal fascists. Yes, fascists.
The SJW crowd, basically.
Yes. Yeah,
no, exactly. That's right.
It's true. And listen, I've been at Trump events. They are fucking loony fascists, too.
By the way, that's social justice warrior, not single Jewish woman.
We
need
to live. We need to live in balance. We cannot live in extremes.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Bernie or even most Bernie supporters. I have a problem with the extreme Bernie supporters. I have a problem with anything that can be reduced to a very simplistic slogan or idea that can be shouted and you can feel self-righteous when you say it.
You mean hope?
And like the system is rigged.
That's
my problem is that like there's the whole the extreme end of Bernie supporters that keep on yelling. Well,
yes,
all right.
We can.
The keep on yelling the system is rigged and thus hope. Everything needs to be burned to the ground. Like that's like when Trump can repeat that. Like Trump has been actively repeating like the system is rigged, crooked Hillary, yada yada. He's doing that to bait Bernie supporters, like when a slogan is simplistic enough and an idea is simplistic enough and emotional enough and not based in like really rationality but emotion, that Trump can be repeating it effectively.
Yeah, but you're assigning a rationale that doesn't exist with Donald Trump. Okay, let me tell you something.
You think he's not thinking about it that hard?
No, I'm not sure that's true.
No, hold on. I think he knows what he's doing. But I don't think it's to the tactical level of what he picks. I think he is more like a level one improviser where he sort of spits it out. He spits it out and then he hears what works and then he regurgitates.
Well,
with all due respect, I think he's actually more like level two or level three. No, I mean I think he's a lot smarter.
And
one of the reasons why he did well in the debates, frankly, is he is an improviser and he knows how to respond. And whereas the other guys are these very canned.
Yes.
They're like more like level one, like acting class kind of thing. They know how to spout out the same lines. That's why Christie was able to like eviscerate Marco Rubio because he was sounding like this. Oh, I am the Marco Rubio.
Robo Marco, right?
Exactly. But Trump knows. Partly because of his reality show stuff, he does know how to respond in the moment,
right.
And that actually passes for truth or substance.
Well, no,
in
it's
politics.
Core, but I'm saying it's sort of like meat savvy. It's like savvy from the meat of his brain. I don't think that Donald Trump is a great like planner in the sense that he's articulating these, constructing these ideas.
But he has an incredible innate ability to understand what will affect people in the gut.
I'm saying that that's not it. What I'm saying is that's not even intellectual. That is a visceral thing that he has. It's not a strategic political intelligence.
A lot of his discussions.
They just happen to line up with
each other. A lot of his rallies, doesn't he go out and say, they say I shouldn't talk about that. Should I talk about that?
Of course.
And then he waits to hear if there's applause.
He's
and when there's like giant
comedian.
Applause, well, he's like, oh, okay, I'll talk more
he's
about that.
He's a storyteller. I can tell you, listen, I've watched this guy more than anybody up on this panel. I can guarantee it. I can guarantee you.
I have watched more Donald Trump than anyone.
You're even talking like him. You just guaranteed
I know.
Twice.
Excuse me. Now let me say something. I want to say this. I really want to say this. This is very important. I'm serious.
I'm the biggest watcher of Donald Trump.
I'm going to say this, which is that
his audience is huge.
He's masterful. He can hold a room for an hour and a half, and he does this. It's perfect. He comes out, and it's the same thing. This is the thing. It's a frame. He's done the smartest thing in the world. Instead of having the specific language, he has the frame. And the frame can change so that it's new every time, but it's the same thing.
It's not the repetitive stump
speech.
And
what he does, yes, but he is the medicine man at the campfire. He comes up and he stands there. I know it's repulsive, but you better fucking connect with it because he's gonna become the president if you don't. So you huffing your fucking butts in the air at the idea that the guy's doing it doesn't change reality.
Don't
you
laugh
get
at
that?
This comedy show.
So don't laugh at it. I don't care. So
It's specifically up to the people in this room.
But what he does...
And it's your fault if it happens.
He stands there and he does a great thing. Here's the polls. You're beautiful. Here's what we're doing. Here's where we are. Here's the story of how I got here. Here's the 17 I defeated. He's a victorious warrior. He is a warrior standing in front of you in a great... in a great cave or a great like Greek built, you know, structural piece, and he's giving you the story, and that connects with something so deep to us. It is beyond modern era thinking,
so,
and that is what he's doing. And people better catch up to that. And
no,
I know we're also going, that's what's fucking happening.
I know it's terrifying.
I totally agree. I think that we're so last week tonight is an extremely. Cerebral show. It's we present facts in a very rational manner. It's much more that way than Sam B. Sam B is very emotional. We build a case.
Because she's a woman, right?
She's a woman.
Well, she's very she's very emotional. She's hysterical.
Sam B's a woman.
I mean, she's had children,
guys. It's just
when
a lot of
children in our brains.
That is,
just
I want to say for the record, that's exactly what I'm saying. John Oliver is a rational man and Sam B is a hysterical woman.
That is what you said.
No. But the tone of the show.
We know what you meant, Dan.
The tone of the shows are different.
Quote on our posters.
It's been fascinating though working at a show where we build such cerebral cases, because it's very funny learning how ineffectual that is against emotion. It's just people just don't care. You can give them all the facts in the world, but that guy stands up and speaks, and people are just it's incredible.
What did the Clinton campaign bring up? 2006, Trump said something about the fucking housing thing, and they are marching that out for a goddamn week. What are they, idiots? Nobody gives a shit what Donald Trump said. They are.
So,
who gives a shit about what Trump said in 2006? People don't give a shit about what Trump said yesterday.
So, Anthony, what is his weakness? What is his point in the middle of the Death Star that we can hit and take down? And is it...
You have to go to the schoolyard with him. Yeah. Yeah. And no one will go to
Marco
the schoolyard.
Marco tried it and did it so poorly.
Because Marco is a little boy in shorts and suspenders who walked into the schoolyard and was like, yeah, Donald.
Can Hillary do it?
Elizabeth
Warren has sort of done it.
Hillary is like, listen, no one is standing between me and the fucking White House.
I don't know, man.
I lost this shit to Barack Obama.
I don't know. I think Hillary.
I'll be damned if I'm
losing it. You know
what?
Let me tell you something. If you're at the poker table.
I killed Vince Foster for that.
Yes. I murdered Vince Foster. I'm getting this. But that's how crazy
that should be. That should be the real Hillary kind of. What really works with audiences is actually authenticity, even if you have to fake the authenticity. That's what Anthony's saying in terms of what Trump is doing. Hillary tries to be this person and then to kind of be that person. Just come out and say, I am the killer Terminator bitch who is going to do anything I have to do to make it to the White House. That I think is going to
happen.
People would connect to that.
If she just
the
went, listen,
Hillary,
I've been running
Hillary
for this shit
the,
for 25 years. Yeah, but the thing I would say about her or about this thing is that I don't think obviously a campaign is also isn't just the candidate, it's everybody. And I think that they have people there going, well, we'll pull this. They're still fighting it like it's Kerry in 2004, or they're fighting something that doesn't exist. They're fighting Mitt Romney. This guy, you have to go to the schoolyard with him, and you have to figure out what is his nickname. You have to figure out what thing you mock about him.
The person who actually got closest to this, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is the congressman from Long Island, Peter King. He basically described Trump as the crazy guy at the end of the bar who's been there, actually, appropriately enough, who's three or six or seven beers in. That's the guy who says, oh, well, God damn it. Why don't we just ban all those frickin' Muslims? Well, let's build a good goddamn wall and keep the Mexicans out. Make Mexico pay for it. That's the guy that... So if Hillary was smart...
She's really fucking smart.
She's policy smart. If she's politically smart,
she needs to be intuitively.
She's bad at running for president.
And women have good intuition.
We are so emotional. We're so emotional.
Doesn't Sam B have great intuition? And John Oliver just can't find anything.
Yeah.
are
you never asked for directions, that guy.
He never asked for directions.
It's crazy. It's crazy Uncle Donald. He's doing it again.
It's uncle. That's it's your uncle. It's crazy your uncle at the Donald. Thanksgiving table. Thank
you, so what is your nickname? And it's got to be alliterative, right?
It does.
It doesn't have to be. No.
Okay. No. What is your nickname?
I don't know. Fatty Don. I don't know. Little Fatty. Little stupid fat red
but
fatty.
Because, you know the one
red
thing.
Fatty.
Red Fatty.
I do think if you attacked, everything he does is ad hominem.
Big
right?
Baby. Like, that's another good one.
Everything he attacks. Like he attacks Dinky people Dick based Donald, on their looks, based on who they are. But if you attacked him, he is so sensitive about how he looks.
And Elizabeth
whatever.
Warren.
If somebody
that,
did
she,
it naturally,
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, she does it.
Elizabeth Warren is funny. She's very intellectual. She used to be a professor and so forth. But she knows, particularly when she goes on Twitter, she knows what to do to like get a rise out of him, and it actually works. So
yeah, well, she's your like single aunt at the Thanksgiving table in Massachusetts, who's like, "What, Donald?" That's who she is. She's the single aunt who never had children, who lives in some weird apartment downtown, and she's the one yelling at Donald. I want to say this. The media, I know that we say this, and I know the media is some big monolithic thing, so let's just break it down to, like,
present
some cable
accepted.
News, present company excluded. But really, I will say at least the print media has been doing its job. The cable news networks have been infomercial sites for Trump, explicitly for him, and they do not. There are things that this man has said that they do not question. They are baffled. And I saw on CNN a week ago, he went on an interview, and the guy said to him, hit him with the Hillary Clinton question about the housing thing, and he said, "I'm the presumptive nominee. You're not gonna. You know, this is a very rude way to start an interview. Don't you think you should congratulate me for being the presumptive nominee? Very rude. I love CNN and blah blah blah." And this fucking guy goes, "I'm sorry," and he restarts the interview live and says, "You're the presumptive nominee." So if those are the people, you have these weak-willed, fucking shriveled-brained 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds who are the people who are the hard-hitting news people.
So you know
this
what?
Is
we
one
have
thing
a question
we wanted
about
to talk
this.
About. We want to talk about
and
this.
And actually, I want to get the opinion of
God
Dan Malinkus
damn it.
Specifically on this, even though, yes, Robert, you are also... But, I do. Our big thing is so Jake Tapper actually did a pretty good job of calling out the Vince Foster scandal recently on CNN.
Uh-huh.
He did a really
which
good
Bernie
story
Bernie people
about
love
it.
Too. Bernie people oh, yes. love the Vince Foster scandal, which is
sure.
insane.
It's insane.
So the far left,
Vince Foster for
right wing
for the millennials out there, Vince Foster was a friend of Bill and Hillary Clinton. Traveled with them from Arkansas into the White House. And about 6 or 8 months into President Clinton's administration, he went into a park and killed himself. Or did he?
Yes,
scandalous.
He did.
No, so let me talk about this.
But
the way
it is
an interesting
story.
Sure.
It's,
he did,
it's like Chandra Levy. I mean, it's one of the great fun mysteries of Washington.
But there's
the
no
way,
mystery.
But the way that Jake Tapper
there
covered
six
it,
six independent investigations, and he killed himself. And he has a family, and this
sure,
keeps getting
brought and there was
up,
no second gunman in the Kennedy assassination.
But
the
no,
way that Jake Tapper brought it up, as he said,
that was
this
a,
is
that,
something
Ted Cruz's
been,
dad did that. You
that's
know
right.
That.
Yeah. Ted Cruz's dad.
Jake
we
Tapper
know.
Approached that as a lie. This is something that's been debunked. There's been a congressional commission about it in 94 and 95 and Ken Starr in 97. And this is a lie, and it's despicable that's being brought up. And to me, like, what drives me crazy about mainstream news or cable news and network news is that I feel like the like NBC Nightly News will start tonight. Donald Trump brings up accusations of Hillary Clinton possibly murdering someone.
Treating it as if it's a legitimate concept.
Well, whereas I wish that Lester Holt could start the program with, tonight, Donald Trump lies and brings up something that has been proven false.
Right, like, but what you don't know is that Brian Williams is underneath the desk with a fucking X-Acto knife ready to cut his fucking Achilles tendon if he does that.
No, I think he's going a little bit higher than the 10.
So anyway.
But Melinda and Dan, what I think is interesting is you two, specifically on comedy news, have been able to go at this in a different way and expose a lie. How do you think legitimate, not calling you guys non-legitimate, but legitimate news organizations should handle this? Because I think they're having a hard time handling lies. How do you do that?
I don't think they want to handle it. I think they know what they're doing. Uh-huh. And it's working out great
That's
for them.
That's interesting. Oh, okay.
I hear
Let's
you.
Dispel the notion that the media doesn't know what it's doing. The media knows exactly what it's doing.
Yeah, I second
Marco Rubio callback for the small one.
I don't know. I think that like it's difficult because I think that you know after 15 years of Fox News doing what Fox News does, plus now the advent of clickbait journalism, there is a thing that has happened in this country where everyone, if you have an opinion somewhere on TV or the internet, there is a thing that backs up your opinion. No matter how objectively fucking batshit it is, you can cite something. And I think that like I know I sound like an old person, but there's like there's something to be said for like some sense of like objective truth somewhere. And that seems to be gone. Like, everyone can cite a thing or, like, link to a thing or link to a video or link to an article that backs up whatever they think. And so there's, like, the idea that there's some sort of objective truth has almost disappeared.
Well, the deeper problem... Oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
I was just going to say, to link to that point, is I think that what's happened, and you see this a lot with Chris Matthews on fucking Hardball, is...
The new name of the show is fucking
it
Hardball.
It should be, because he is the most bloviating, self-congratulating, largest ego, useless
you
individual.
You could do a great Chris Matthews impression.
He works
impression.
For Tip O'Neill,
I just know you could.
I do my Matt Owl better. My friend James does a good Matthews, but... And you can watch our Fusion special, Shout the Vote, and you can see
what
both
channel
of them.
Is that? What channel is
that? That's
Fusion
on Fusion, which used to be a lawnmower until someone put a radio antenna on it. But what I want to say is this is very important, which is that they've ceded their journalistic integrity partly because when I think it was learned that the horse race, that the idea of what the strategy is and who is leading and who is winning, in other words, the drama of the political field is more interesting than the policies of the political field.
And that's a wild note.
Every single person who got into media, and anyone go to Emerson College here? Yeah? No?
You're
all
really
right. Anyone ever take a media? Anyone ever take a media studies class in college?
Okay. George Washington
So we
University.
Already all know that you are trained to do this in media studies, that colleges are conditioning young people to go into media not to investigate the truth, not to report the information, but to appear physically appealing on television and to read the prompter and to say the things that provoke information, that provoke watching, that provoke viewership. So we're not in a state where anybody is discussed. If we were in a state of real journalism, people would be like, why is fat orange Hitler running for president and this old witch and this weird old Jew?
But I do think we're in postmodern world right now.
But I do think like
it's complete and total postmodern world right now.
Mm-hmm.
If assuming Hillary ends up, you know, putting away Bernie Sanders, I mean, defeating him electorally, not like, you know, killing him and pretending it's
the
suicide.
Way she did,
Sealing him into a wall.
But if they do that, once it gets time for however many debates that she and Donald Trump have, at some point, if she says, thanks, Donald, you know, you said all these great things, da-da-da-da. You've also said that I killed Vince Foster. You've also said that Ted Cruz's dad killed JFK. You've also said that, you know, forget about the wall stuff, you know. He's a walking comment section. I mean, just call him out on every
If Hillary ever says, you also said that I killed Vince Foster, it's just going to be replayed. I killed Vince Foster.
Good point.
Point taken. You know,
Know the truth.
I do think...
You know,
I do think though that there's no more harmful thing to the political discourse in this country than the loss of the concept of objective truth somewhere. Because like I do like even just recently we did a piece on at the show on like the primary process and delegates and superdelegates. And I don't have like super strong opinions about Hillary and Sanders, but like with this particular situation, there was the Nevada caucuses they were very hotly contested, and Sanders
and his
supporters were saying that there were accusations of, you know, fraud and things were unfair.
Fraud is waking up late to show up and not filling your paperwork.
Right, exactly.
Out on
and
time.
Basically, like, look, like I come at this from a very like I don't care that deeply. I just like try to research and know what is actually going on, and like. We found like PolitiFact did a very, very, very detailed like look into the process and found that like, yeah, the rules are fucking complicated and bad. They should probably be changed, but they were followed and everything was done according to the books, even if the books are unnecessarily complex. everything was okay, and there, right. and the allegations of fraud and abuse are just incorrect. And then that we even fact-checked PolitiFact, whose job is to fact-check, and it was just it's just true. Right. Like everything was followed.
Well,
and
I'm gonna say something nice
show,
about.
Sorry, but we aired the show, and then if you look at all the comments, they're just like, well, they're citing PolitiFact. Right. So it's just like everyone is like 20-year-olds, like Hillary. It's just like,
I'm just say something nice about it. Like, I'm going to say something nice about Hillary Clinton, and I hope this doesn't get back to my Republican friend.
It will. This is a podcast.
Hillary.
Subscribe.
Hillary Clinton had a better argument to make for the nomination for president in 2008 than Bernie Sanders does now. Obama beat her.
She was closer.
Obama beat her. Obama beat her in delegates. She beat him by more than a million votes in the popular vote in the primary. She could have tried to do a floor fight and all this other kind of stuff, but she didn't. When she realized that he'd clinched the delegates, she stood down. Sanders right now is behind in pledge delegates, behind in super delegates, 3 million votes behind in actual votes, and he's actually saying, "Oh, the system is rigged. The system is rigged."
He's going to get 95% in California, though.
Well, you know what?
Here's what I'm going to say about Nevada, just real quick. It was when 20-year-olds learned that the world isn't fair. And here's
and
the
it
thing.
Happened in Nevada.
It's
before the hangover, guys.
I'm so sorry, but the world isn't fair, guys. I'm sorry.
So, Anthony, I want to close on one final point, which is, Robert, you tweeted today that Obama's approval rating is at Reagan levels. And for 1988, Reagan was like 53%. That's what Obama is now. Do you guys think that in 30 years, there'll be 18 Democratic candidates running for president at the Obama National Library who will be saying Obama over and over again in their opening statement? Is Obama our Reagan?
Not if Obamacare keeps going the way it's going and people are paying $1,500 a month for fucking health care. No, I don't think that'll be it. And I'm a lefty. And let me tell you, this system, $900 a month, a wholesale payout to the fucking insurance.
So you're
companies?
For Sanders. You want single payer tomorrow.
No, I want anything but what is happening. I want anything but what's happening, which is a disaster. And it's a right-wing disaster. I don't know why he ever took Romney's plan. It was a mess back in Massachusetts. It's a mess now in the country.
You know, I think
to answer your question, though, probably not, because Republicans tend to revere their previous candidates unless they were like almost impeached or something like that. Whereas Democrats seem to be like, you know, it's like on to the next one. It's 20 years, the most successful Democrat of the last 40 years, Bill Clinton, and everybody right now is running away from every policy that he put out there, including his own wife. So I think by 20 years from now, people will say, we'll have reasons to be running against Obama's legacy.
I disagree. Obama for life.
Yeah, Obama for life. But we need to wrap life. Up. We need to wrap
oh,
up.
I don't think he should go to jail.
Need to wrap up. We've come to the end of our time.
We have.
I love when the righty and the lefty are getting along.
I can't believe I was like, we got a Republican on the show. What the fuck am I doing in bringing Anthony out here? You guys are going to kill each other. And you've agreed more than anybody on
no,
the station.
No, because it seems like we're both people of reason.
This was the Trump-Sanders thing.
It felt very much like mom and dad were telling us what we needed to think.
I see everybody used to chill out and recognize the difference between legacy and reality. Obama has a great legacy. There's a lot of amazing things he did. The reality is, look at your health care bill and understand it is not a perfect plan by any means. And you got to get over the bloom is off the rose, guys. When you're paying $700, $800, $900 a month for healthcare, that is not a good deal.
And the one upside of this might be the one upside. I can't believe I'm going to say this. The one upside of a potential Hillary,
this is my strategy.
Hillary presidency is she could actually fix it because she's been thinking about this stuff a lot longer. Than
she
Obama
tried to
was.
Pass it in the 90s.
Exactly. So
that's
she
why
will
hashtag
fix it.
I'm with her. Thanks everyone.
Hillary's
so
going to fix healthcare. We all agree. We all agree on that.
Hillary's
going to
fix healthcare.
Thank you for coming. Come to our show next week. Subscribe to our podcast.
Thank you. Give
it up for our panel. And please vote in midterm elections.
Woo!
Thank you, guys.
Charlie and a few of the friends. Chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better when you do beers in.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.